Marvelous. Well, I forgot to introduce myself. My name is Daniel. I'm one of the pastors of this church. Just started talking. It's just ridiculous. There you go. As you may or may not know, this term we have been journeying through the Gospel according to Matthew. That is the first book that you will come across when you open your Bibles and get into the New Testament. And we have been exploring this Gospel according to Matthew with the theme of Jesus and his revolutionary family. That Jesus came to start a revolutionary family and that we are part of that. And so today, as we kind of come into close, I'm going to break with tradition a little bit. Are we okay with that? Can I break with tradition? So today, this is not what we normally do, but today I'm just going to speak to the Christians in the room, if that's okay. So can you just put your hand up if you identify as a Christian? Yeah? Great. So I'm speaking to you today. Anybody who didn't just put their hands up, it's okay. You're off the hook for today. It's a free ride. Go on your phone or something. Don't really go on your phone. No, so just to say, a little bit of a break with tradition. So today, in our journey through Matthew, we have reached a significant moment. We have been reading chapters 23, 24, and 25. And chapter 25 contains the last teachings that Jesus gives before going to the cross. So I hope that one of the things that you've learned this term, one of the things that I've learned is that Matthew, the guy who wrote this biography, was an absolute genius. That he was really writing this book on purpose, that he didn't just have a grab bag of stories and parables and he was kind of lifting them out one at a time and just plonking them down on the page. No, what he's done is he's taken the life of Jesus and he's carefully crafted a narrative for us because he's trying to convince us of something. Now in Matthew 26, next week, that's when Matthew starts telling the story of Jesus going to the cross. So Matthew 25 is the last moment that Matthew has to deliver some of Jesus' teaching to us. So I think that we should pay really close attention to that because this is Jesus' last moment to impart something to his disciples. So that's what we're going to be focusing on today. But before we do, I want you to imagine for a minute that you've just been handed an invitation to the Oval Office. Now, we started this series with some invitations. You were invited to a revolution or a family dinner. You've got another one. You've just been handed an invitation to the Oval Office. And I want you to imagine as well that you are stoked with this invitation. You are so pleased to be invited because you are a massive Trump supporter. And so you are so excited to be going to the Oval Office. You've got the MAGA cap. You've got a selection of billboards. You wear nothing but American flags. You've been to all the rallies. You've got all the bumper stickers. You have a tattoo of Mr. Trump on your backside. And so obviously you are so stoked to get invited to the Oval Office. Yeah, some of us actually do have that. And so you go in, you sit down on those sofas, and you shake hands with the big man. He says, I'm not going to do an impression. He says, welcome, welcome. Tell me, what have you done for my campaign? How have you acted for my revolution? And in response, you start listing your things, the ideals that you ascribe to. You talk about your activities on internet messaging boards. You talk about your opinions of migrants and those who think and behave differently to you. You quote back to him a whole load of his rhetoric, and you are just convinced that you're pleasing him. But then the president turns to you and asks, okay, but what have you done to reverse the effects of climate change in your city? What have you done to show kindness and welcome to your neighbors from other nations? How have you engaged in patient, loving discourse with those that you disagree with? How are you feeling right now? Confused. Fairly confused, right? I imagine you would leave the Oval Office feeling pretty confused, that somewhere along the line, you may have pretty seriously misunderstood the man at the top. You know, you've acted to please this man. He is really important to you. It's a confusing moment, right? And as we read through Matthew, the moment in Matthew that we've reached, we find ourselves in one of those moments, didn't we, if you read chapter 25. The final parable of Jesus sees Jesus at the end of time wrapping things up once and for all, you know, bringing the revolution to its ultimate climax. And he does so by gathering his followers into two groups, one on the right and one on the left, a little bit like we did earlier on with the tea and the coffee. So should we read it? Should we read this final parable? I'm just going to lift this thing up a bit. Apparently there's no slide, so I'm just going to read it along. So it says this, but when the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, then he will sit upon his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered in his presence, and he will separate the people as a shepherd separates sheep from goats. He will place the sheep at his right and the goats at his left. So we've got sheep over here. Give us a wave, sheep. How's it going? Goats, how's it going? You feeling confident? You shouldn't. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. Because I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me." And then these righteous ones will reply, "But Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you something to drink? Or a stranger and show you hospitality? Or naked and give you clothing? When did we ever see you sick and in prison and visit you?" And the king will say, "I tell you guys the truth. When you did one of these things for the least of my brothers and sisters, you were actually doing it for me." And then he turned to those on his left. "Hey goats, how's it going?" And he said, away with you, you cursed ones, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his demons." This isn't going well. "For I was hungry and you didn't feed me. I was thirsty and you didn't give me a drink. I was a stranger and you didn't invite me into your home. I was naked and you didn't give me clothing. I was sick and in prison and you didn't visit me." And the guys on the left will say, "Lord, when did we ever see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick and in prison and not help you?" And he will answer, "I tell you the truth. When you refused to help the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were refusing to help me." So we could unpack that all day, couldn't we? That, as a little story of Jesus, as a teaching story, it stands on its own and it bears its own message. And really, just as Emily shared with us last week, Jesus is teaching us to treat those around us who are oppressed and marginalized, those who are the victims of this brutal world that we live in, with the same kindness and honor and dignity that we would show to Jesus if we found him in their shoes. It's powerful stuff. But today, I just want to pick out and notice one really simple detail, which frankly, I've never really noticed before. And that is that both of these groups, the sheep and the goats, both of them said, "But Lord, when did we ever?" Both of them said, "But Lord." Like, we're not looking at a group of followers of Jesus and not followers of Jesus. All of these people are followers of Jesus. All of them are calling him Lord. Both of these groups know who he is. Both of these groups have clearly been doing stuff here on earth. Both of these groups have come to this moment assuming that they're in Jesus' good books. They've walked into the Oval Office with a degree of confidence. And yet the man in charge of church turned to them and said, "Bro, you didn't get it. You missed the mark. You didn't understand who I am and what I'm looking for." Christians in the room, how we doing? This is a harrowing moment, right? Do I have your attention? Both of these groups called Jesus Lord. Both of them seem to have thought that they were part of his revolutionary family. Both of them seem to think that they've got a basket full of fruit for the king to build on, to build on Emily's talk from last week. And they're getting to the final moment and finding that they've missed the point. We should be paying attention to this. This is the last thing that Jesus says. Now, for some reason, I am fascinated by naval history. I love reading books about the Napoleonic Wars. I love to picture these massive ships crossing the ocean with their sails aloft, firing cannons at each other. Who's with me? Yes! Patrick O'Brien fans. Come on, there's nothing better. And one of the things about sailing these big ships, one of the big challenges when sailing is to navigate where you want to go. And so some of the things that the sailors did back then is that before the advent of satellites is they would navigate by the stars, they'd look at the sun, and eventually they would look at a compass which is always pointing north, which will give you a perfect bearing of exactly where you're going. Now, I want you to just imagine for a second that you're a sailor on one of these ships and you're about to undertake a really long trip, let's just imagine you're going to go like Portsmouth, so the bottom of England, over to Brazil, to like South America. You're going to do a huge stretch, like 3,000 miles. And you set out from Portsmouth. And as you do, you take a compass bearing. And you know that Portsmouth is exactly that way, according to my compass. Now, if you are just one or two points off when you set out from Portsmouth, then it's not that big a deal, is it? You're just going to, you'll go a couple of miles down the road and realize, oh, crikey, we're off course. And you can correct, and you'll be back again. But if you take a bearing before you set off, and you're just a couple of points out, and you don't check your compass again, you're going to set out on that 3,000-mile journey, and you are going to miss that landfall by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles. So if you are the captain of a ship, and I did ask ChatGPT to draw me a captain at his ship, so it's a shame that the slides haven't worked because it was kind of creepy. ChatGPT never gets the eyes right, does it? It's really weird. You're like, oh, that's a lovely bit. What's wrong with his eyes? Anyway, so I had this picture of like Captain Birdseye at his boat, and he had his compass with him. And where was I going with that? So you're navigating across the sea. You've got your compass. If you are standing at that helm, if you're standing at the wheel, you are checking that compass on a minute-by-minute basis. Like, you are sailing across the sea. There are no landmarks. You can't go, oh, there's some rocks over there. I'm just going to point my bow at that. No. You're looking at your compass every couple of minutes and going, oh, I'm a little bit off. You're making slight correction. You make a slight correction. Oh, you check, and you make a slight correction. And so today, as we start to bring this series to a close, as we listen to Jesus, our leader, and the leader of this revolutionary family, I want us to lean in here. How do we, like those sailors, constantly pay attention to the compass? How can we be sure that we're on course? How can we be sure that when ultimately that day comes, we've understood Jesus, our leader, and produced the fruit that he expects? I think it's absolutely no surprise that Jesus finishes his teaching ministry, that Matthew puts these stories last, because Jesus knows what's coming next. Jesus knows that he's about to die, and he knows that his followers are about to take up the baton from him and continue his revolution on his behalf. And he knows that his followers are going to be pursuing his revolution, not for a couple of weeks, but for hundreds and thousands of years. He knows they're about to cross the Atlantic. They have a really long journey ahead of them. I think that what Jesus is trying to do for us here is to give us a compass, to pass us a compass such that we are able, in any moment as we stand at the helm of our lives, to check that compass to make sure that we're on the right course. And so today, with the time that we've got left, I just want to spend our time reading the second to last parable in Matthew 25. It might be a bit familiar, but we're going to read it anyway. So here we go. The kingdom of heaven, the revolutionary family of God, can be illustrated by the story of a man going on a long trip. He called together his servants and entrusted his money to them whilst he was gone. He gave 5 bags of silver to one, he gave 2 bags of silver to another, and 1 bag of silver to the last, dividing it in proportion to their abilities. And then he left on his trip. Okay, so audience participation moment. How's it going? Straight up, what are we learning about this man here? This guy who's in charge, what do we know about him? Tell me some things. What have we learned? He's got eight talents, yes. If you've got a more traditional translation of the Bible, it might say talents. We're going to go with bags of gold today because, like, talents gets confusing. We're just going to go with bags of gold. So what can we say? He's a wealthy fella. Anything else? He's in charge. Very good. Anything else? He's good at delegating. Very good. One of the things that I noticed about this is that he says he gave the bag of gold to each person according to their abilities, right? So notice how he doesn't give anybody, any of his servants, more than they can handle, right? That, to me, implies that he knows his servants really well, right? He knows them. He's spent time with them. He knows what they're capable of. He's given them money according to their abilities. He's a pretty kind guy, right? I like this guy. He's generous. He's rich. He's wise, he's kind, he's a smart cookie. I like this guy so far. So, where are we? The servant who received 5 bags of silver began to invest the money and earned 5 more. The servant with 2 bags of silver also went to work and earned 2 more. But the servant who received the 1 bag of silver dug a hole in the ground and hid the master's money. Okay, so we've got 2 approaches here. Invest the money, make like double it. Hide the money, make nothing. two approaches. Let's see what happens. After a long time, the master returned from his trip, and he called them to give an account of how they'd used his money. The servant to whom he'd entrusted 5 bags of silver came forward with 5 more and said, "Master, you gave me 5 bags of silver to invest. I've earned 5 more. And the master was full of praise. "Well done, my good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in handling this small amount, so I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together." Brilliant. So what else are we learning about the master here? Come back at me. What have we got? He rewards good work. Very good. What else?
He likes a party.
He likes a party. That's exactly right. Anything else? He likes a profit. Yeah, very good, very good. So this guy rewards hard work. Anybody here ever been in a job where you feel unseen, undervalued, and underappreciated? Yeah, I see some hands going up in the room, right? Yeah. So we all know what that happens here. Anybody here ever been passed up for a promotion? Yeah, a couple of hands up. Yeah, we know how that feels. So there's no way that's happening here. This master sees and appreciates hard work, and he rewards it with a promotion. And as Charlotte says, he also invites the servants to a party. Like, this guy's awesome. The servant who had received 2 bags of silver came forward and said, "Well, master, you gave me 2 bags of silver to invest, and I've earned 2 more. The master said, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in handling this small amount. So now I will give you more responsibilities. Let's party." How are we feeling about this boss? Quick show of hands, who wants to work for this guy? Like, this guy is legit. Come on. But then we get the little twist. Then the servant with the 1 bag of silver came forward and he said, "Master, I knew you were a harsh man, investing crops you didn't plant and gathering crops you didn't cultivate. I was afraid that I would lose your money, and so I hid it in the earth. Look, here's your money back." So, quick pause. Based on what we've heard about the master so far, would anyone use the word harsh to describe him? No. Other translations of our Bible say, "I know you're a hard man. I know you are a severe man. I know that you are a demanding man." Personally, not the words that I would have used. But the master replied, "You wicked and lazy servant. If you knew that, if that's your opinion of me, if that's who you think I am, why didn't you just invest it in the bank and I could have at least got some interest on my money?" So what's going on here? Just like in the first parable, we read about an account of 2 different groups of people, a group of people who get it and a group of people who miss the point. In both stories, apart from everything else that's going on here, on a very base level, each of us wants to be in the group that gets it right. Yeah? Like, whatever else is going on here, we all want to be part of the group that gets it right. We certainly want to be receiving the "well done." We certainly want to be in line for the reward. Whatever your theology about what happens to the folks in the other camp, it's fair enough to say we really don't want to be part of that group. Am I right? It's like, that's our instinct as we read these parables. And what I see when I read that parable about the bags of silver and the servants, I see one stark difference between the first 2 and the last 1. And that's what they think the master is like. Each of them thinks they know the master. Each of them thinks they know who the master is and how the master works. And they behave according to that. The first 2 know that the master is not a person to be trifled with. He's not a pushover, but he is kind, he's generous, he's wealthy, he knows his servant well, and he really wants to bless them. The third servant thinks the master is harsh, tight-fisted, brutal, scary. Did you notice that he said, "I was afraid"? He thinks the master is scary. He knows that the master is not someone to be trifled with. He knows that he's not a pushover, but he's really to be feared. He's not to be trusted. And someone who you really don't want to get close to. He's not safe. He's not loving. He's angry and he's demanding. He's a hard man. And so here we see some servants who know who the master is and who totally have lost their compass bearing. This poor third servant, somewhere along the line, somewhere in the time while the master has been away, somewhere in that long trip across the Atlantic, as they've lost their compass bearing. They're a couple of compass points off. And as a result, they've missed the landfall completely and they're hundreds of miles away. This third servant is the person who says to Jesus at the end of time, "But Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and thirsty? When did we fail to give you a meal? This third servant is someone who is convinced they know the master, convinced that they are at the work of the revolution. But when they find themselves in the Oval Office in front of the big man, they realize they've misunderstood him all along. And so guys, as we bring this long and wonderful series to a close, as we pay attention to these last words of Jesus, I think we would do really well to lean in here. Because we want to be part of that group receiving the reward from our loving, kind, and generous master, don't we? And those of us who are not followers of Jesus, if we wouldn't identify as Christians, I was actually only joking before, this is obviously also for you. Because if you're making up your mind about following Jesus, this is a really key and important thing to know. How are we going to know that we're heading in the right direction? How are we going to know we've got our bearing right as we cross the Atlantic? How are we going to know that we're following Jesus' instructions whilst we wait for his return? And I'm sorry to say, I don't think it's particularly glamorous, but I do think it's very important. I'd like to suggest that we follow Jesus' example. It's always a good place to start. Throughout the book of Matthew, Jesus has been doing this thing, and we're going to see him do it again next week in chapter 26. Throughout Jesus' life on earth, he would withdraw from everyone, find some time to be alone, and hang out with his Father in heaven. Find some time, find some quality time with the Master, to look him in the eye, to remind himself, not about the actions and the expectations for the day, not to get a renewed to-do list, but who the master was to him, or simply who the master is, what he's like, his character. For Jesus, whilst he was physically alive and present with us here on earth, we see him again and again taking some time alone, checking in with his Father, checking his compass bearing, making sure he's still on course. And I'd like to suggest that for us today, as we finish this series and consider what it means for us to be Jesus' revolutionary family in Gloucestershire today, that this is one of the most core and fundamental things that we need to be paying attention to. To ask ourselves, in what ways am I regularly checking the compass? In what ways am I connecting with Father God? In what ways are we getting to know each other regularly, daily, hourly? Do I know what the Father is like, deep down in here? Do I know what he's really like? Not just a shifting shadow of what our earthly fathers were like, but what our heavenly Father is actually like. Do we have a narrative in our hearts that our Father is generous, kind, wise, loving? Or do we have a narrative in our hearts that our Father is harsh, demanding, and severe? And whilst we're talking about checking compasses, I'm guessing that none of us has walked in with a compass today, but I'm also going to guess that all of us have got one of these. I've actually got two. I've got yours. There you go. That's yours. All of us have got one of these, haven't we? And, you know, we all have bigger versions of that in our homes, don't we, which we pin on our walls and we put on our tables. And we spend hours of time daily attending to those things, don't we? We would be foolish if we didn't acknowledge that all that attention isn't having some kind of a formational impact on us. We would be foolish to think that all of that attention is not nudging us a couple of compass points off where we should be. And I know it's a little bit of a cheap shot to say, how much time are we spending engaging in culture and nonsense through Netflix and Instagram and TikTok compared to how much time we're spending one-to-one with our Father in heaven? I'm aware that's a really cheap shot. But seriously, how much time are we spending one-to-one with our Father in heaven compared to being led by these things? My hunch is that if each of us went home right now and did a time audit of our daily attention, the results would be embarrassing. Who's with me? Yeah? I think if there's one thing these parables want us to wake up to is that there's actually quite a lot at stake here. I feel like if we don't read this and have to spend a little bit of time thinking about our regular daily rhythms, then we haven't given it the attention that it deserves. I think we've missed the point. If we don't spend some time identifying what compasses we are paying attention to, I think we've missed the point. I think that what Jesus is warning us against is what we see all over the place with every religion. That we can really easily just get swept up into doing all the right stuff, going through the motions, doing the things. Jesus is really clear here that unless those actions are motivated by a heart that is in contact with the Father and pointing towards the Father, we will be off course. We would do, you know, we can all do this. We can all fake it till we make it. But it would just be good activity. What Jesus is looking for is membership of the revolutionary family, where we know and inhabit the family values because we know who our shared Father is. The readiness, the activity, the compassionate generosity that Jesus is calling us in chapter 25, they're supposed to flow from a deep, intimate understanding of who God is. And equally, if we've got a misunderstanding about who God is, we will follow a different path. And the message of today is that that misunderstanding of who the Master is, having a misaligned understanding of who God our Father is, will lead us to nowhere good. Now, we're going to take a moment to respond now. We're going to take a moment of prayer. Emily's going to come and sing a song, and we're also going to celebrate communion together, which is something that we do every week. And this is a moment to have a chat with the Master in our hearts. Now, you can embody that however you feel appropriate. Usually we stand when we sing, but you're welcome to remain seated if you want to. Maybe you want to just engage in a moment of quiet prayer in your heart. Maybe you want to come and celebrate communion as a way of kind of embodying that and joining in with Jesus. But this moment won't be for everyone. This isn't for everybody. But I feel that there is something, if there's been something today that has convicted you, I want to invite you to start by standing. And then we're going to lead us on from there. Oh, kiddos, hi, great. Do you want to come on back in here? Let's welcome the kids back in, and then I'll lead us in a moment of response. Welcome, kiddos. You are amazing. Come on in. So, growing up, slight change of plan. Let's all stand together. There we go. Let's do that. Okay, in a moment, we are going to welcome the kiddos up, and I'm personally very much looking forward to hearing what you guys have been learning. Grown-ups, we've been doing some business with God over here, and kiddos, we're just going to ask your permission to just finish that business now, if that's okay. So the way that the grown-ups are going to do it, and kiddos, you're welcome to join us as well, hey Rosanna, is to celebrate communion together. This is something that we do every week, and this is something that Christians all over the world will be doing today. So here at the front, and there at the back, we have two stations, and at each station there is gluten and dairy-free bread, and there's a little cup of squash, and we use those things to symbolize the body of Jesus and the blood of Jesus, which was broken and shed for us. And so when we take some of that bread and we dip it in the juice, we're effectively saying yes, please, to the life that Jesus offers us, which starts now and goes on for eternity. Now, anybody here is welcome to come and celebrate communion with us. You don't have to identify as a follower of Jesus. But if you do come and take communion today, you do need to know that that is a serious moment of saying yes, please, to Jesus. And so, grown-ups and kiddos, we're going to respond. Grown-ups, if you need to do some business in your hearts, go for it. Have fun. And we're going to sing a song that the kiddos actually wrote for us. We're going to sing a song that the kids wrote in Kids Church. And it's called, You Are Good God. And that's kind of what we as grown-ups have been talking about today. That some of us in our hearts, we've got a different story about what God is like going on. That says, you're not good God. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to sing the truth. We're going to sing You Are Good God together, as our kids have taught us to do. So in your own time, as a family or on your own, come and receive communion here or at the back. And then once we've finished, I'll just gather us together. We'll hear from the kiddos and we'll go from there.